mistakes are the losses we must pay for. From the cities to the farmlands and trenches full of mud. Cause war has always been the boss's way, sir. Come on!
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. So it looks like today in Kentucky, the governor vetoed their budget and their General Assembly overrode the veto. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, given some of the reports that I've heard that it's not a good budget. It doesn't help move forward. Also, the pension bill tied to a sewer bill. There's so much to this. Which is why I've asked John Stovall to come talk with us. He's the president of Teamsters Local 783 there in Kentucky. John, thanks for taking time for us.
Oh, glad to do it, Rick. Glad to do it.
So walk me through what happened today.
Well, we had another large mass turnout down there of teachers and public sector employees, you know, for county and city and state workers. And we showed up. There's a few thousand down there. And we had our thing. And then, as usual, his smug little self, he comes back and They overrid his veto, and basically what it was, it's kind of a pick your poison. His was really bad, and what they came back with was not really good, but they've raised taxes on 17 different items that you like getting your grass cut, your car worked on, 50 cents on cigarettes, haircuts. So it was kind of like I said, one's bad, the other one's horrible, but neither one of them's worth it. But the problem with the whole setup was they never once sought out new revenue to help shore up this pension plan and budget.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it was all regressive tax increases that are going to hurt people at the bottom so they can turn around and go, see, well, you know, it's those greedy teachers that made us raise taxes on you poor people.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And if you've seen his video today, which you're probably calling it a good time, he put out a press release that because all the teacher and public sector employees were there at the Capitol today voicing their opposition, what was their constitutional right to do, that poor children were home getting sexually abused, physically abused, beaten, and left by themselves because we were there protesting. And he put that on it's on Wave 3 News here in Louisville, Kentucky, and everything else.
Does he know that? Is there something inside information that he's got that the rest of us don't know? I mean, is he talking about his own caucus? You know what?
I have no idea. Down here in Kentucky, we call him Trump Light. He's on Facebook. He's on Twitter constantly. Now, he usually won't talk to a major news channel. He'll go to Western Kentucky, the Bible Belt area, where he still has some support, and he'll go on radio shows and internet shows and stuff like that. But, yeah, I mean, it's on the news. They've got it on the news here in Louisville.
Well, I'm not surprised by it. Look, I mean, it's, you know, they've all learned from Trump. I mean, we've got a baby Trump here in Pennsylvania, too, Senator Scott Wagner, who's running for governor. So we could have another crazy, you know, little baby Trump as governor very soon here as well. But, you know, they've learned that they don't have to talk to the media. They don't have to answer to we the people. They can sit in their little echo chambers because, look, the right wing has done a masterful job of creating an echo chamber for them.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, between Right to Work and everything else they've done, in order to explain Right to Work to, you know, some membership or some of the citizens, it takes you, you know, 2 to 3 minutes to explain to them what it means. Well, they've got them 30-second sound bites, and it sounds great, and people buy into that. And he's got it down to an art, too, with the Facebook and the Twitter accounts, and he throws them little shots out there without anybody challenging him on it.
No,
so,
I mean,
like I said, back to the go. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean the whole no rights at work agenda. You know, from top to bottom. You know, attacks on your ability to collectively bargain, attacks on workers' compensation, unemployment, safety. You know, wage protections. You can just go down the list, and I'm sure you could name off a bunch more that I can't even think of right now. But attacks on all of that stuff. And what's interesting to me is, you know, I've been talking about this American Medical Association report that just came out that puts your state as one of the worst states in the country. If you're 20 to 55 for early mortality, for you ending up dead because of, you know, a whole plethora of reasons, but opioid addiction being one of the top ones.
No, absolutely, yes. And he's cut funding and all that stuff. And he'll get on there and act like he really cares, but he's cut funding. He's hid away, which I don't, the Affordable Care Act, and he's tried to, you know, switch it to the Medicare, and he's just, I mean, he's done, and the very people that, for whatever reason, this is the part I've never been able to figure out, the very people he hurts are the same people that just believe in him. I guess like Trump. they think he's the champion for certain causes, but they all seem to think that knife only cuts certain people. It doesn't cut everybody. And when you try to explain that to them, you know, everybody's going to get hurt by this bill, or everybody's going to get hurt by this tax increase, or everybody's going to get hurt with these programs taken away. They seem to think it applies to everybody but them.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part.
No, it is. And, you know, and I've been talking to a couple of teachers from Kentucky, and, you know, the stories that they tell about having, you know, to fill kids' backpacks with food for the weekend so that they'll have something to eat, and, you know, buying supplies so kids will have pencils, and, you know, kids maybe not having enough desks or books or, you know, all of this stuff. And you go, you know, to me, even if you love this guy, the fact that your kids aren't getting the best possible educational opportunity at the only time of their life they're going to get it should just infuriate everyone.
It does, and a lot of the demonstrations, that's kind of slowly filtered out. You know, it started off with the pensions, because a lot of public sector employees, especially here in Kentucky, they don't make a lot of money. Some of these government jobs, like state jobs, state highway workers, the ones that plow the snow and patch the asphalt and put guardrails up, and guys and girls don't make a lot of money. So they take this job because it had insurance and it had a promise of a pension at the end of their career. And so they took those jobs. And the same thing with, we represent a large public sector group here in Louisville, Kentucky. We've got close to 2,500 public sector employees, from mechanics to bus drivers to security guards, electricians, HVAC. So we got all, you know, the road department and grounds department. So a lot of them guys, if they were in the private sector, they could make more money. But in the public sector, you know, it's secure. They thought they had a pension. You know, they signed up for it. The pay wasn't always the best, but you had certain advantages. And now that he's came in the past 2.5 years, pretty much wiped all that out.
Yeah.
And he's not happy with that, still trying to wipe it out.
No, I mean, what they've done, and look, and this is what I try to explain to folks, you're right. What you just laid out, people take those public sector jobs that pay a lot less usually, but do have decent health care. It does have something of a pension at the end of the road, and it's got some job security. There are definitely some benefits, but like you pointed out, for less money, what they wanted to come in and do is they want to be able to take those lower wages and make them even worse, and turn those public sector jobs into private sector jobs, to where they can, you know, hire and fire and steal pensions and do all the things that they got away with for 30 years in the private sector.
Absolutely, and they'll subcontract a lot of the work out, even though in the long run it ends up costing the city or the county more by subcontractors than what it does to have the fine person that or you know, working that day-to-day job who has ownership in that job. But the other thing they've done with our pensions, Rick, and a lot of people haven't touched on this, and this is the part I can't figure out because I'm not a rocket scientist, but you've got a lot of people who are already drawing their pension, and then you've got people in the old defined benefit pension plan. Now he's taken the last two plans and taken them out. So all those people that are drawing the pension, those still working for that pension, there's no additional money coming in to those plans.
Right.
And I brought it up to two or three different people, and they said, "That's good. That's good. That's a good question, John. We'll have to check into it." Then one of them finally answered me. He goes, "Well, that'll be the state's responsibility to keep that funded." I said, "Just like it was the state's responsibility to fund this."
Yep.
And he turned around and walked off.
No, and look, you being a union guy, that's one of the first questions you're going to ask, because it's something that I asked when Pennsylvania wanted to do the same thing and create these hybrid funds and create a defined contribution for future employees. I go, what happens to the people who are, one, collecting today, the people who have retired and you've made a promise to them? And then the people who are close to retiring that you've made a promise to as well. And the answer that I got is, well, you look at the private sector, they only guarantee their defined benefit plans for 3 to 5 years. So in their mind already, they've got the thought that, you know what, a couple years down the road, we'll just do like the private sector got away with. We'll just slash the benefit, throw it on the back of the PBGC.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I said, that in trying to get people to understand that your vote has consequences. Now, I think the last 2 years, I think we're making headway in Kentucky, and we'll know more in November. But we've got more Democrats running for public office now than we've ever had in probably the last 50 years. And a lot of them are teachers and public sector employees.
Yeah.
So it's woken up some grassroots, and it's, you know, it's really brought the state together that normally, you know, Louisville's the big economic engine of the state, so sometimes we're viewed as the bad guys. But it's brought us all together now, because all walks, from Pikeville to Western Kentucky to Northern Kentucky, Louisville, we've all met. And, you know, we've built a strong network, and, you know, and I don't think this is going to die down anytime soon.
I sure hope not. Look, at the end of the day, if you punch a clock and you collect a paycheck and it doesn't go far enough at the end of the week, You're a working class person, and I don't know how you vote for someone like Bevin or someone like Trump or any of these Republicans today who I don't view as Republicans or conservatives. I view them as radicals. These Ayn Rand radicals have with this tax cut fetish and this fetish of feeding more to the wildly wealthy. At some point, we as the working class have to wake up because, yes, they may have all the money, but we've out-procreated them. And for now, we can still vote.
Yeah, absolutely right. And that's the biggest thing is waking the base up. And like I said, right now, because they're starting to see that. And, you know, 10 years ago, we thought John McCain was crazy. But, hell, he looks more normal now than half the Republicans out there.
Yeah, I never thought McCain was crazy. I knew Palin was crazy. And maybe McCain was crazy for picking her.
Yeah.
But you're right. McCain seems like, you know, boy, let's bring me Mittens. Bring me McCain. Hell, bring me George W. Bush.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I said. They look normal compared to what we have right now. And then the sad part, those people are the ones running the country right now. And that's the shape we're in and where we're going. It's basically what they want to do, and I think you know this by your radio show, they want to destroy the middle class. They don't want a middle class anymore. All they want is the haves and the have-nots.
Exactly.
And unions have been the backbone for middle class for the past 100 years. And if they can every assault the Republicans have waged, it's been against unions.
No,
and we're down to, 10% or 11%, you know, unionized left in the United States, and they continue on us. And like I said, we're the last bastion to keep from being the haves and have-nots.
And I argue also that, you know, it's not just the fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. It's the sense of empowerment that they want to strip out of the working class. The sense that they matter. The sense that collectively they can make change and affect positive change, not just for themselves, but their families in the future. I mean, you know, that's the real, to me, that's the real power. It's, you know, I talk to union members all the time who believe they can change things. And it's that I think they're really afraid of.
Yeah, it is. And like I said, you know, earlier, it's woken a lot of people up here in Kentucky. It's made them take a second look and, you know, and not take stuff for granted because, you know, a lot of times people get caught up in their own lives and their family and stuff like that, and they kind of forget. And, you know, the civil discord and, you know, the marches and the rallies and all that stuff's kind of gone away except for, you know, radical on both sides. But now that the union's starting to wake back up and the members are starting to get more involved and they realize what's at stake. So that part's been good about it.
No, I mean, we're at a moment in history, and there's part of me that, you know, the question that I keep coming up with, are you optimistic about the future? Because, look, I got people whispering in my ear that the Janus decision is going to come down possibly as early as Monday, and where we make the entire country a right-to-work nation or a no-rights-at-work nation, as I say. You look at all of this organizing that's going on, this groundswell of activity. We're at a real difficult point in our history, I think. But are you optimistic about where we can go from the future, given what we're seeing?
I think so. You know, and I'm worried about that Janus decision, too. Now, we got word from the International it was going to come in June. And so if it comes earlier, maybe that's a bad thing. You know, that is the one scary thing. And the one thing I've told a lot of our people is we've talked about, they're so screwed up in Washington right now because they would have the votes to get national rights passed through if they wanted to. But they're so screwed up. So this decision, it does scare you because, you know, kind of changes the whole ballgame. And, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, it's just they see the good, but some of them, you know, they'll say, well, I really don't want to pay dues. I shouldn't have to pay dues. But, you know, then those same people when they're in trouble, they want to come to you for representation.
Yeah.
And what I've always found funny is a lawyer, in order to practice law, has to be a member of the Bar Association. But these are the guys that write these laws that try to weaken the unions and do that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, that one's scary. I guess that's a $64,000 question when that one comes out.
Yeah, I mean, because the reason I ask is, you know, I look at all of this grassroots organizing. I look at it in a place like Kentucky, which is now a right-to-work state. I look at, you know, the idea of, you know, the hell with the law. You know, the heck with industrial peace. You've got these Republicans who have spent the last, you know, 20, 30 years trying to undo the 20th century and take us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s and not the 1980s and 90s. To me, I'm looking at this and going, this is the end of industrial peace. Where do we go as a movement?
I mean, like I said, the Janus decision will be the big one, but I think you keep plugging away. You can't give up. You give up, then you got no fight left. So we got to keep fighting. We got to stay united. We got to keep networking. We got to keep reaching out to each other. And a lot of times we can be our own worst enemies on certain things. So we need to put our egos in check, work together, man up and brother and sister up and let them know that there will be consequences. We may not be able to change it overnight, but we've got a movement going now, and people are starting to listen, and we can't let it go. As a union leader and as union members, you know, we call out to them too. You know, they expect John Stovall to get on TV or the radio and raise hell and do that kind of stuff. But John Stovall looks a whole lot better when he's got 2,000 or 3,000 people standing behind him. And that's the same way with every union. The membership's got to get out, and they've got to get involved. And like I said, I've been proud of our membership so far. We've had quite a few go with us to Frankfurt at the Capitol. So that part, and you know, the webpage, even though I hate Facebook and all that stuff, but it's a necessary tool. But you can get the message out a whole lot faster now and keep them informed, whereas, you know, before you try to do phone banks or you try to mail letters out. So this part, they're staying more involved, and they're staying in touch, and they're calling more now than I've been up here for, you know, close to 15 years at the Union Hall, not as the president, but, you know, as a business agent and worked my way up. But they're more involved now than they've ever been. So that's an encouraging sign. So I think if we can survive till November this year and maybe get some House seats back in Kentucky and hope the Janus decision doesn't go the way that, you know, a lot of people think it will, then we'll be able to hold on and keep fighting.
It'll be interesting to see where this goes. Let me ask you last line of questioning, because I do want to go back to where we are right now. Where's the pension at this moment? Will there be a little bit more money for education? What did the budget, you know, do specifically? Is there anything positive you see out of this, or is it just shades of bad?
Shades of bad. It's like picking your poison on death row. The Bevin's plan was going to put it more back on the city, on each city and individual school district, where there would be a lot of school districts that would bankrupt. Like the city of Louisville, I think, was facing either a $38 to $42 million shortfall funding back to them, and it was the same way at the school district here in Louisville, Jefferson County Schools. So it would be hard pressed for them to be able to keep up without layoffs and mass cuts across the board. House of Representatives came back and they gave a phase-in period of over 20 years. To absorb that money. But like I said, it's kind of like a quick killer or a slow death. But if we can make the changes come November and get this back, then, and like I said earlier, we ran an ad in the newspaper up here in Louisville that, you know, there's nothing wrong with the pension other than inadequate funding. They chose not to fund it at the adequate rate they should have been funded.
Yep.
All our members have put their money into it, but they chose not to, you know, fund it right. So we, you know, offered, you know, explored gaming, casinos. We have horse racing and everything else here, but we don't have casinos. Medical marijuana, you know, all kinds of different ways. And I took ads out in the paper and everything and encouraged them to look for other ways to fund this. They wouldn't do it. And, you know, Kentucky's kind of got a little religious section that's kind of got a strong voice. And they've kind of, you know, kept Kentucky back on a lot of things and held us back. And so that was the biggest thing that I had and a lot of the other unions had besides the teachers. They sought out no new funding whatsoever. They wanted to put all the costs on the backs of the very people they represent.
Sad, sad stuff. And again, but not surprising, it's what we see in red states all across this country. And I'll tell you, it's going to take folks like you. It's going to take people out in the street, your members, thousands of people behind you and with you to help us turn this around. And, John, I appreciate you taking time and sharing some of your thoughts and keeping us up to date on what's going on there.
Yeah, I thank you too, Rick. And we'll give a shout out to Matt Alley, who's one that kind of hooked us up. And he's been a strong voice with getting us, you know, the message all the way across the state down here. So, like I said, good people like you and all of us staying together, we can win this fight. We just can't give up.
Good stuff. John, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Rick. Take care, sir.
All righty, John Stovall. He's the president of Teamsters Local 783 there in Kentucky. And look, you know, at the end of it, it's going to take all of us. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
And the bills are creeping through the door. It's desperate times, so desperate measures we explore. Marching on the Capitol to lobby leaders for involvement. 3,000 people screaming out, where's our government? Lawsuits and arraignments. Members under company surveillance. Public divided. Either they love us or they hate us. Rocket billions off our back. And it's still not enough. They should have took into account that we never give up. We'll be here one day longer. The people's voice is stronger.
Class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.